everyone, and welcome to the Songwriters on Process podcast. My name is Benno Papari, and since 2010, I've run the Songwriters on Process website, where you can find more than 200 conversations with songwriters about the creative process. I'm not here to talk about tour stories, band drama, how a band got its name, or favorite foods. My goal is to treat songwriters as writers, plain and simple. This is an intelligent conversation about the writing process between two writers. And today we have Gavin Rossdale of Bush. Bush has sold over 14 million albums worldwide. I believe 16 Stone, their biggest album, sold over 7 million copies. And Bush has new album out. We talked. Rossdale, I believe, was in a tour bus. So just as a forewarning, I take these interviews when I can get them. In the perfect world, we'd be in a podcast studio and I'd be talking. We'd have fantastic audio, but it never happens that way. I'm always in my house. These artists can be in a room, in a bus, in a car, anywhere. So just keep that in mind as you listen to the audio. But hey, like I said, it's either interview them when they can do it or not interview them at all. With that, the audio is not horrible, but just keep that in mind. I love this conversation. There were a couple of things that really stood out to me that Rossdale said. One was that his biggest inspiration as a songwriter are not songwriters. His two biggest inspirations are Francis Bacon and Lucian Freud, the painters. Not for the painting themselves, but the way they paint, their process, their ritual, how devoted they are to the craft. And he talked about how there are those parallels, how he tries to kind of model his process itself. Again, he's not a painter and they're not songwriters, on how they do their work, you know, kind of the butt in the seat, do it every day. Doesn't matter if you don't want to write, if you don't want to create, you still have to do it every day. And so those are his two biggest inspirations. He's a voracious reader. Bukowski he's a big fan of Bukowski, Ginsberg. And I think we talked about Vonnegut and some others as well. And the one quote that stood out, a couple of them, one is he said that the real lyrics have speckles of blood, speckles of sweat. And that the more truthful you write, the more you weaponize those words. And so the element of truth in songwriting. And he says, you have to have, the other thing is, he talked about fragmented fireworks. He said, you have to have fireworks. You have to pull people in with an interesting turn of a phrase and pulling people in that way to the song. So talked a lot about literature in the beginning of this. He's a voracious reader and the influence that writers have on his songwriting process. I enjoy this conversation a lot. Here it is. Gavin Rossdale of Bush. Outside of songwriting, do you like to do any other types of writing? I find that some songwriters like to journal or maybe write every day and see if they get ideas, or are you just strictly a songwriter?
I'm probably pretty much strictly a songwriter, but I mean, if phrases or words come to me that I like, I will I jot them down. You know, certain phrases that appeal to me, things that I say. By the same token, whenever I read, I had a girlfriend who used to be really offended by the fact that when I would read, I would write things down in the book or make notes in the book, because I don't know what it's like, you know. You're a professor, so it doesn't happen to you. But for me, when I read, if I don't make notes or something, I can forget. You know, you read 300 pages of a book, it's quite hard to retain. So I'm always looking for interesting uses of language and great writers and, so forth.
So are you writing things? Actually, let's get into it and talk about those writers, because I do find that songwriters are relatively pretty voracious readers. I don't talk to many songwriters who say, I don't read, it's a waste of my time. So I think they recognize the value between reading the printed word and inspiration. So who do you like to read? Do you have like for me, at least, I don't like to read. I read one person, but then I want to get another voice in my head. So I'm not the type of person that says I'm going to read everything by
that author. So I just kind of, oh, okay, that's good. Let me see what else is out there. But yeah, what do you like to read? What are your reading habits like?
You know, like everyone normal in there. I read something good. I read Luster by Raven Lelani, and then it makes me want to read. And then I read something else that is a bit not as good. It puts me off reading for a couple of months, for a month or so. But I do, you know, for me, it's essential that I have always prided myself that I'm primarily a songwriter. That's my main job, you know, and everything else, the offshoots of guitar, singing, performance, purpose, is secondary to writing. And so I was lucky enough to, you know, have an early studying of, you know, I did French and English and Spanish at my school. We have A-levels in England. So through that, I learned a lot of all the different the literature of those languages, you know, different examples of those literature. So therefore, I got a really good basic background in French, Spanish, and English literature. And then when you leave school, it's brilliant because then you don't have to follow anyone's advice. You just read what you want and you follow your nose. So that's what I, you know, Paul Auster would be like probably my favorite writer, Martin Amis. I just like people, you know, think about someone like Paul Auster. He's so succinct and it's so economic, yet replete with everything that you need, more than you need. And you can take a chapter. I say to my kids who don't read enough, and they see me reading, and it's not a young person's world to read books, but I'm always trying to encourage them that even if you just pick up a chapter of a book and you read someone else's, it's just someone else's voice in your head, you know, it's the most beautiful art form, it's the most private art, it's the loudest and most private form, because someone can, you know, you're reading what someone's thinking, they're telling you. And when people get it right, you get lost in it, you know. And then I do have a heavy background in, I can't get away from the power of Ginsberg. And I do try and read poetry, and I would love to talk to you off air, because some poetry I just don't understand. I don't get it. And it's the really kind of more obtuse stuff I don't really get, you know. I don't know why people love this poetry. And it's always like a bit more of a layman, you know. So when I discovered Bukowski as a kid, what I liked about him was he was not flowery and exotic in the way of Ginsberg. But what he was direct and could just break down a situation that could just pull you in just right out of nowhere, you know, sort of like haiku, like a haiku. And so as a songwriter, I'm just always looking for that Burroughs, that Bowie cut-up technique. I'm always looking for fireworks. I'm looking for fireworks because most things go past us at a sort of a, in a monotonous way, in a lacking in impact way. And I think that if you write words and you write songs, you have to have what I call fireworks in there. You have to be able to pull people in with an interesting turn of phrase. Two words put together that aren't usually used is a simple way of describing it. But it just creates these sort of worlds for people to go into. And funny enough, early on in my career, I got, you know, when back in the day when criticism meant much more, I was always accused of having non sequiturs and having, I was not John Cougar Mellencamp or Springsteen with a storybook version, which is a legitimate way to tell, you know, countries based in stories. It's just not what I'm based in. I'm from London. I'm from the streets of London. So I think that it's all about fragmented fireworks that makes it more interesting to me as a writer, because I have an innate feeling when my lyrics are done. You know, if I write a verse, the way I look at it, because Dylan said that the challenge was that, you know, no line is as best line, no line is as good as the best line in a verse, and no verse is as good as the best verse in a song. So this is the dilemma that we face.
Right.
But I just think that you can just keep punching up wherever you're working, every line, every, you know, I don't have any wasted lines. I've had them in the past where I go, when I listen back to it, I'm like, there's something lazy about that. You could have like pushed further. You could have pushed and pushed and pushed and gotten something more interesting and more exciting for myself. And then when things are exciting for yourself, there's a chance that people connect. And, you know, I knew that when I wrote on this new record on the Art of Survival, when I wrote This Fuckery Will Be the Death of Us, I just know that people can relate to that because it just is life. And the more truthful, and I've learned this through my process of becoming a writer, the more truthful you are, and I didn't appreciate this when I was younger, the more truthful you are and the closer to the bone that you can write and the more revelatory and honest, the bigger the power, the greater the power. And it's only when you, if you modify or you imagine or you push somewhere, you're moving into territory that now becomes like akin to what's the difference between decorative art and art that matters. So decorative lyrics would be lyrics that fit, lyrics that rhyme, lyrics that just work in that situation. But real lyrics are the ones where you, when you look underneath the words you've written, there's like speckles of blood or speckles of sweat on there, or the truth of experience. And ironically, with the Art of Survival, I've been through so much this last couple of years. It's been devastating in many ways. And to some degree, career-ending. And but I've chosen to not illuminate or expand on that because all it did is it just gave me a brutal honesty and a genuine, authentic place to write from. And that's enough for me because I wanted to land on your desk in your car, unfettered by my journey and really about how it appeals to you. And owing to the truth of it and the darkness of that truth, it just means it just comes out fucking raw. And the more truthful you write, the more you weaponize those words.
Yeah. I want to ask you, you mentioned Bukowski, because I was going to tell you that there's four authors that songwriters always mention. Bukowski is one of them. Raymond Carver, the short story writer, Kurt Vonnegut, and Cormac McCarthy are like the big four that are always get mentioned because I think, as you said, it's the economy of language. There's not one wasted word. And, you know, I remember reading Vonnegut the first time I read Slaughterhouse Five, and it took me about a third of the way through the book before I realized I could actually laugh. Like, there were parts of the book where I thought, this is so horrible. It sounds funny, but I'm not sure I should be laughing. And at some point, I forgot what the image was. I thought, okay, this is actually too funny. And then I realized, oh, I can laugh at this book and also cry and be sad. And I think that's the power of his writing, is all of those emotions. I mean, Cormac McCarthy, some of those other writers, there's not much happiness in those lyrics, but in those words, but Vonnegut. So I don't know. I'm curious if those other authors, you know, other authors like that ever influence you.
Yeah, of course. You know, I think I've read The Road, and Kurt Vonnegut, you know, over the years, but it's inspiring. And I get Slaughterhouse Five because I'm sure I looked at it when I was a kid, but it's not one that stayed as it should. You know, it's funny.
Yeah.
Literature and art and all these things it's all about the orbit and the time and when you appreciate them, and different people mean different things at different times, you know. And one thing I do, I don't have many regrets. I've matured enough to appreciate the regrets for once great desires. And so to live in regret is to sort of try and sort of, you know, edit your life in a way that's just not feasible. And I think can only lead to unhappiness. You know, I think that if you just stand by your choice. So I just mean that I just do wish that I'd had college education and just had the benefit of the guidance of a few great professors to just move me along. Because I'm a bit self-taught. I'm like a bastard. I did go to a very good school, very academic school. I was lucky enough to go to. So I had the benefits of that education. My sense is that Cormac McCarthy, when I think of the road, right, would just give me a sense of that he's might be slightly more in the storied vein. Whereas what I got from Ginsberg was just spectacular. The kind of the elevation of language and to juxtapose, you know, starry machinery of night, you know, whatever it is, you know, whatever you want to say, you know, from a howl or whatever. Ted Hughes, I really loved, but then it's not all of it I understood. Sometimes I read it, Sylvia Plath, I'll read it, be like, this doesn't make any sense to me, you know, doesn't make any sense. But when you read Spider Bites and when you read, you know, that, Kisses Were Like Spider Bites, and just that whole, oh my God, I had that read at my wedding. I made my ex-wife's hairdresser read that for our wedding. Beautiful.
So speaking of writers, you know, it's funny because I read these interviews with prose writers and poets and novelists, and they insist that you have to write every day, butt in the seat. It doesn't matter if it's good. You have to write. You have to spend time every day writing. But it's funny because for the most songwriters tell me, they do it when they're inspired, and if they're not inspired, they won't write. So where do you fall into that?
It's a wonderful conversation. We can talk as long as you like, right? I'm enjoying this. It's fun. So, because I based my entire artistic life off of two painters, Francis Bacon and Lucian Freud, both incredible artists. And my favorite thing about them was their vocation and dedication to their work. And their whole thing was they'd go every morning, 6 a.m. to 12, and they would go and paint. And, you know, and Bacon would be off. I've studied and lived off of these guys forever. So Bacon would go off to French House, to Wheeler's, go to the Garrett Club, go drinking, gambling, you know, looking for sort of sex and life and fun and brutality of life and whatever. And Lucian Freud would, I think, just like fuck everyone. You know, there were 39 heirs for his estate. Oh, his family was 14. There were 39 claims on his estate. They were all met. He just would just live the life, you know, and he was just living a life. But what I base my life on, I must press their work ethic. And I don't, this whole inspiration thing, it's just such a crock of shit. Because not if you're a professional, it's like, yeah, sure, if you're going to maybe do one record and maybe write the one book, of course, Christopher Hitchens had the best line. You know, they do say that everyone has a book. Everyone has a book inside of them. Of course, in the case of most people, that's where exactly where it should stay. That's not the premise for a professional musician who has deadlines and accountabilities and responsibilities, and has given life to it. You know, I've been doing it for a few decades, so therefore, I'm all about time off and stuff like that. And of course, when I get inspiration at night, when I write, we're talking about write things, you know, of course I'll write things down. But it is wholly and solely about putting your ass in the chair. That's all it is. Being a professional is to show up every day to your job and apply yourself. And absolutely, you know, I always say to myself, sometimes I say, well, fuck it, let me write a shitty song. Because if I write a shit song, it's going to get me to the good song. And what am I going to sit and wait for a hit record to hit me while I'm sort of, you know, on a beach with a margarita? So no, I'm of the school of application, because I don't know any other way. And if I was to wait, for example, I'm on a tour now. I mean, I made the deadline, and it's just funny because it's something that this is my own reality. Nobody wakes me up in the morning. Nobody calls and said, what time are you going to the studio? Nobody rings and said, how did the day's writing go? I just know that in X number of days, I'm going to go into a studio with a producer and I'm meant to produce some work to go in. No different to when your writer is going to meet an editor for a deadline. You know, when are we going to start to work on the first draft? And I'm also don't think I'm good enough to take sporadic pops at my work. I have to be consistent. I have to be dedicated because I think that it's a muscle. It's a muscle. Creativity is a muscle. And yeah, you're all well and good, and you go out and play a perfect game with no preparation and lead up and no training. But ultimately, the greatest writers, the greatest people of our time, are people that are just dedicated, you know, to their craft, and that just is an ongoing. It's a lifestyle. I mean, it's a life choice.
And it's a fear of failure. It's not being afraid to fail. I should say. I think if you're the type of person that waits and says, I'm not gonna write until the inspiration is there, you're afraid that, you know, you're afraid. I think there's that fear of I'm gonna produce something horrible. But you were saying,
the danger of sound. You know, you absolutely destroyed me because telling me like, oh no, Springsteen told me this, or Stevie Nicks told me this, whatever. So everyone's different. I just believe. I think it's an individual journey, and I don't feel, you know, just, I don't know, just, it's so many details.
Yeah.
Oh, so many details. And that goes for the words, that goes for the music, the chords, the notes, the counterpoints, the rhythms. It begins with me with silence of, I got to start, and it ends with checking the appropriate amount of silence between the songs to finish the record. So my life is bookended by silence, and I just want to get the best out of it. And that application is the only system that I know. And I think that to have a different system would reduce the quality. That's it.
Yeah,
the quality we reduced. I mean, you know, other people, you know, maybe are lucky enough and brilliant enough to do it other ways. And I'm always intrigued. I always, by the way, think that different ways in are great. You know, I'm much more collaborative than I used to be. I often write just top lines, but no one's ever written a word or a melody for me in my whole career. You know,
yeah,
never sang anyone else's melody. And that probably comes from me sitting there trying it and working through it until I find what I think is the best that I can do, and then presenting that. And I've been so far so good. If I work with producers, never once someone did try to change a phrasing or a line. I was like, yeah, that's the reason for this. I remember poor Dave Sardi. Yeah, that was in 1999. I still remember it. It was changing the timing of a thing, and I'm like, but I promise you, this is the reason why I did it. And like, I'm not totally ready to scrap the song and say the song is not good. But if you're going to use a song, this is why that has that. And I'm, you know, I'll change anything that I think goes for the better. And it happens to me all the time. I have to sort of collaborate and sort of forfeit some things that I'm not too sure about. Certain songs I listen, I'm annoyed at myself that I don't do that anymore. I push it through. But there's certain songs that I was just annoyed that I didn't finish the words. I didn't work myself hard enough on the edit.
So, I have a little bit of a writing ritual. I know the time of day that I'm effective. I write in this chair, but I revise in that chair behind me. For whatever reason, I need a change of environment. I don't like to write and revise in the same state of mind and literally the same physical state. So do you have, how aware are you of a ritual, whether it's place, time of day, things you have to have with you? Again, I read these interviews with writers all the time, and I'm fascinated by those, you know, the rituals they have to be effective. So is that important to you at all, or you pretty much can write anytime, anywhere?
No, rituals are important, of course, you know, but Rainer Maria Rilke, Letters to a Young Poet, you know, he talks about you have to have the ability, you could write anywhere in a jail cell, you know, the writing is what you write. So I can sit and write words anywhere. I should say that I write so much on this record, weirdly enough, but I tend to write most of my words separately. Those are the things that are ongoing. Because see, when I talk about writing, it's not just about, to me, it's just sitting down making music, you know. And the writing is weird because I find it more, it's much easier. I could write a song in 10 minutes, 5 minutes, if I have the words. If I have a set of lyrics, like Bernie Taupin gives Elton a set of lyrics. And I used to be completely incapable of writing a song without a set of lyrics. I just have music and go round and round. And then I'd just be like, well, you know, the lyrics give me the mood. They give me the tempo. They give me the emotion that I want to get. Whereas if I just open up a drum machine and start playing, I'm like, well, what? You know what I mean? Like infinite possibilities here. But I do think that, because what happens is once I get going, so I have a few words and then I get in and then it unleashes it. So it's just, I like being in my studio and then when I'm on a roll, I just got to get out of the way of myself. So I will just be quite feverishly writing wherever. So the main thing is the only ritual I lead is no other people. If I was to see what's consistency in my writing, it's the absence of people. And I think that's the only thing. I can't do it. I can't do it in a house where someone else is listening to the radio the other side of the house, even in the house, just the energy, just that. I need to be alone. I can't, you know, I've had it where people come and sit in the studio floor and they'll sort of, you know, my girlfriend or something like that, you know, start like painting something on the floor. It's really fun and very movie-like, but it's not really, I'm just thinking, no, you're eating the energy in the room. You're in there. You're in the energy. You're just in my, so now I'm slightly, yeah. So no, I need alone time is a crucial thing. And the consistency. So I find airplanes really good to write on. Because then I drink and I get lost and I'm like off. And then once I edit, you know, I often can write, you know, a couple of pages and then like after two or three stanzas or whatever, you know, verses, then I start to motor. I go, oh, that's it. We're in. We've got movement. I can remove those other. And nothing's more liberating than removing songs or words, you know, and just being like, no, be militant. This is great. That isn't. So get rid of that. You don't need it.
So you mentioned poets, and there's a great book called The Friendship by a guy named Adam Sisman, and it talks about the friendship between Wordsworth and Coleridge, the two, you know, romantic poets. And they talk about how
I wandered lonely as a cloud.
Yes, but they talk of, speaking of wandering, they talk about how Wordsworth walked apparently 100,000 miles in his lifetime, but both of those men composed almost all of their poems while they were walking. And Wordsworth actually composed them in his mind, which is mind blowing. He would compose them in his mind and then wouldn't come and revise them, wouldn't come back home until they were fully formed in his mind. But the point is that
he's like, they would, the original Jay-Z.
Yeah, exactly. Back way back in the day. Yeah, only in the countryside. But the point is that they would literally walk around in order to write. And so you mentioned airplanes, but I'm curious if you do get inspired, whether it's walking or hiking or biking or kind of does movement itself, the act of movement, self-movement, not planes and things like that. Do you ever get inspired during those times?
Yeah. I mean, I have a dog, so I go to the park every day, and that's a great place to reflect. And I mean, for me, I think that to be a career musician or career writer, you have to have as many lanes of inspiration as you can. And for writing songs, you know, the next level is to write songs. It's great to have the dynamics and different genesis to songs, because otherwise you can, you know, if I was to personally do the same, by wrote the same thing on every song, or I would be concerned. I think that it benefits from a slightly different environment. And mine takes it's usually about 8-9 months of writing, maybe a year of writing, that yields a record that we do and finish. And, you know, there's lots of songs along the way and lots of songs that get dropped and lost. So I'm just always looking for the dynamic, but behind it is solitude and application and desire.
Yeah.
You know,
it's not complicated. Hemingway once said he thought writers should go to art galleries to be inspired. And I think his point was that you need to be exposed to other types of art to be inspired to be to the one that you're in. And I thought that was so interesting that he said that. So I'm curious, it sounds like I'm guessing that that would be, you'd subscribe to that theory that you need to go outside of songs.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, there's a process of when you write, you're giving out. And when you appreciate other people's work, you're taking in. And it's to each and everyone's personal DNA to figure out how you make that mix or how it affects you, you know, and what resonates for you. And it's incredible because I go to art galleries all the time, museums. And I went to one the other day. I was in Dallas Museum of Art, and funny enough, I didn't even see anything that resonated, but just the fact of walking through the halls and the reverential, you know, I looked at some Islamic art, pottery and plates, because they have an exhibition on, but I didn't necessarily linger, but I walked through and I just saw the designs. I was reminded, thinking, wow, this is a whole tattoo world, the Islamic art is. So I was walking around through that, and then I saw some paintings and resins there and looked at a few things, and it's they're all triggers. Everything's a trigger in it, you know, we're sponges, and it's incredible the power that people give you with their work. As I was saying, you know, the Raven Leilani's book was the most recent sort of modern book that I've read. And it was just so exciting just to be on that journey with her. And it just creates, well, first off, as an artist, as a writer, when people do great work, you're inspired to, you're inspired to not match them, but like, you know, be in the same stratosphere as someone who's doing such effective work, you know, be like, okay, you step the bar up, you know, you step the bar.
Yeah. And that's it for the latest episode of Songwriters on Process. Don't forget, you can find all of my interviews with over 200 songwriters on my Songwriters on Process website at songwritersonprocess.com, going all the way back to 2010. You can read them, watch them, or listen to them. So until next time, thanks for listening.